Welcome to Music from the Tower, highlighting the beauty of sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the magnificent campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. Now, here's your host, John Romeri.
And welcome to Music from the Tower. This is John Romeri, your host. And today in our tower, we have Roger Sherman. Well, now you may not know that name just right off, but I want you to know that by the end of today's program, you're going to wish you had. Roger, welcome. It is
Thank you very much, John.
To have you. Now, Roger isn't just in our tower this week. He has been recording all of our choirs, all six of them, here on the campus, getting ready for our cathedral dedication. Roger is with a Gothic label, the Organ Loft, host on the radio. He is an organist himself. He's the organist emeritus of St. Mark's Episcopal Cathedral in Seattle. I could just go on and you wouldn't have to say a word. Your bio just goes on forever. Roger, it has been such a delight. This is my first meeting you, and what an artist you are in editing our work.
Well, thank you.
It's been phenomenal. You are just a genius. So we record at night and then spend the days editing these pieces.
Yeah.
And I can ask you to take out the most minute little misstep or whatever, and boom, it's gone. You're amazing. That's why you're the best in the business, and that's why we brought you to Christ Cathedral.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be here, and what a beautiful campus. I'm overwhelmed by how beautiful it is here, the buildings and the facilities. This is, for you, going to be the launch of a really great music program.
Well, we're trying our very best here, and you're going to help us launch by the beauty of your work. It's amazing. You know, we're recording in our arboretum. Of course, our cathedral is not open. Hazel is not here playing, but we have our organ Fred, our beautiful Aeolian Skinner organ.
Which many churches would be delighted to have.
Oh, my gosh.
Not as a second instrument, but as their primary.
Yes, imagine. And we have the first and second largest organ in Orange County right here on our campus, you know, 100 feet apart. But it's a magnificent instrument, isn't it?
Yeah, it works pretty well.
You have been recording it at its utmost. Last night, we ended our third night with a big organ and brass piece we've commissioned. And, well, we have so much to talk about. When that release comes out, we're going to be telling the folks about all of our commissioned music and all of that. But I want to talk about you in this first segment. How on earth did you come to such a career? My goodness, did you start going toward music? You also have a huge career, which we have to get in there, with Microsoft.
Well, it's hard
to
say.
You made real money, didn't you?
Yeah, I've always been interested in science and music both, and I'm still wondering what to do when I grow up.
Well, we all are, trust me.
So I've sort of zigzagged back and forth. You know, in one way, the recording of music and presentation of it through media is a way of using both skills. It's about music and it's also about technology.
Yeah, well.
And how to use technology to make music more effective or more widely distributed or better known. And I think that's a valuable thing that sort of combines both. So this is sort of where I landed in this stage of my life.
Well, in the beginning stages, what led you to music in the first place?
Church.
Uh-huh.
Right. And the church I grew up in, we had morning service and afternoon service. Both were an hour and a half long. Both involved a lot of singing. And yeah, the evening started off with three hymns in a row. That's how much people loved to sing in this church. And in school, we sang every morning for 15 minutes before service.
So you went to a parish school as well, a church school?
It was a Protestant school, a Dutch school. You might call it almost a Dutch immigrant school. And then we had Dutch arithmetic books in fourth grade. And
for heaven's sake.
It was kind of fun. And I'm not Dutch, but it was a place where music was really celebrated and was just part of everyday life. And then when I became a teenager, there was a gentleman who was born in Holland who came to the United States. And he wanted to inspire young men in particular to learn how to play the organ. And through his inspiration and leadership, and then he got me to play for services when I was about 15 years old. I started accompanying.
And had you played piano before that?
Oh, yeah. But then I sort of discovered Bach.
Ah, and the organ, right?
And the organ.
Were you intrigued by the stops and the sounds and the...
Well, the organ in our church was came out of a roller skating rink in Olympia, Washington. It was not much.
This is in the Northwest.
Yes. But in 1965, Dirk Flintrop installed this huge tracker organ in the Episcopal Cathedral, and I was a big fan of E. Power Biggs and his recordings on the Flintrop at Harvard.
Right.
So this organ was more than twice as large, and it was in Seattle, of all things. So at the age of 14, I went with my piano teacher down to St. Mark's, and we heard E. Power Biggs play one of the two inaugural concerts.
Those are moments you don't forget, aren't
no.
they?
No.
I remember as a young high school guy going to Grace Cathedral with that same, I grew up here in California, and it was the same. I'll never forget being in that cathedral that night, hearing Madame Duriflay and hearing the Duriflay Requiem and hearing the, those moments just, they don't leave,
Right.
They're part of our history, and they're part of that psyche that says, I have to do this too.
Yeah. So the organ at St. Mark's really became the organ, as far to me, experientially, and the ability to play it, and then learn how to play it better, you might say. Later on, I heard Fenner Douglas play at St. Mark's, and he was the organ teacher at Oberlin, and I was not very happy in the school I was at. I didn't like the organ teacher I had ended up with.
In college.
Uh-huh. So I applied to Oberlin as a transfer student and got Fenner as my teacher, which I was thrilled about.
Wow.
And also for one semester, I had Arthur Poister as a teacher, which was wonderful.
Well, there were some fabulous teachers at Oberlin at that time. I'm sure there still are. But, there were so many names we all knew.
Yeah.
Now, Fenner Douglas might not be anything to our radio listeners, unless you're an organist yourself. But if you studied early French, even for 5 minutes, the early French literature came to life under his pen.
Right.
He's the one that wrote the book that we all
use. The only book.
Yes, the only book that explained to us about these pieces that on the first glance seem, well, that's just a simple little ditty. And then you hear it played by a real French master, and all of a sudden you realize that half the piece isn't on the page.
Exactly. That is really true. And not only the sound of the French organ, which was so different than what we are used to.
Which was completely different than our ears ever heard.
Yeah, but there is also the way of playing it, which is not the way it's on the page. There was this convolution of the rhythm of the piece.
Unequal notes.
Unequal notes and so forth. And so Fenner's book explained a lot of that. And then later on, he wrote the book on Cave et Cole with the complete translation of all the letters and so on. So he was a magnificent teacher.
Well, and gifted all of us with those treasures.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable, and you mentioned E. Power Biggs. And E. Power Biggs and Virgil Fox were the two that brought the organ to prominence in my youth, I guess. But E. Power Biggs did it with scholarship. Virgil Fox did it with virtuosity. And he's a big name here on this campus. He's responsible for putting Hazel together as a composite organ. But E. Power Biggs is the one that introduced us to organs like Flintrop. We wouldn't have even known that name.
Yeah, and he introduced us to the organs of Europe, the historic organs of Europe.
I mean, the glory of Gabrielli. Imagine hearing music made in that space. And he hauled all that stuff to Europe to make those recordings. Right. I mean, just as you showed up with suitcases filled with wires and microphones to do the very same thing here at Grace Cathedral.
Yeah. He and Peggy would bring their own recording equipment. Peggy did the recording engineering. And he edited all of his own tapes.
Wow.
They did the whole thing.
Well, that's because he didn't have Roger. He would have killed to have Roger Sherman.
Well, he had a lot of help locally in Holland. With Flintrop gave him access to the large Schnitger organs there that he had restored. Cor Edskes and Groningen helped him also with the organs in northern Holland. And so he went there. He went to Europe. After World War II, he started recording on these organs that Americans had never heard, fresh sounds for Baroque music of many different countries. And
he introduced us to a scholarship which was absolutely unknown at that time. People before that played Bach just like you'd play modern French, and everything was the same. And hearing these organs made us realize they couldn't be. Hearing the Schnitger sound meant that you couldn't play Bach like you played Franck anymore. You know, there was a whole different way of playing, whole different articulation set.
Yeah.
And Fender Douglas's book, all of those things helped us along.
Right.
To make that scholarship real in a sense that none of us could imagine, at least as a student in the early 70s or late 60s. And it's a scholarship now that people like our David Ball just take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a time when none of us had it.
Right.
You know, and you'd run to the, we talked about this earlier, you'd run to Tower Records and there'd be 8 organ albums and you'd pile through them desperately to find the one that might have a piece you were working on. Of course, there were none. But now any organist can listen to 10 versions of anything played on the organs all over the world. What a time we live in.
Yeah, that is a richness. And I can't tell you how many times I went to the record store and spent my last dime on
you
records.
Got it.
It's,
you got it.
It was a wonderful time. But you're right. Now people can listen to virtually any kind of performance on virtually any kind of organ, and they can gain a lot of information from that. And now we have a diversity of instruments in the United States, too, that allow the instruments teach us how to play themselves. They respond to the way that we play them. And if you have a good ears, you listen to that response and say, that's a good thing, or it's not a good thing. And so that ability has really improved, I think, the situation for organs in the United States and organists. Because
well,
we have
another
diversity.
Thing that's improved organs in the United States are your fabulous recordings. And we're going to talk a lot more about those with Roger. We're in the tower today with Roger Sherman, the master recorder here in the United States, or probably anywhere in the world. But we're going to hear you actually play a little harpsichord piece now. Tell us about this piece quickly.
Well, it's written by Jacques Dufly, 18th century French composer, just as we were discussing. His pieces are character pieces, and they're wonderful. Oftentimes in this French classical era, people title things with enigmatic titles, and you have to figure out what it means, and most of the time you can't figure out. The title of this piece is refers to an island in off the east coast of Africa. So I have no idea what it actually means.
How it ties to the piece? Or...
No, but it's a beautiful, a brilliant little fast piece. It's
and here is a brilliant artist, Roger Sherman, performing it on the harpsichord. We will be back with so much more. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Music from the Tower on Relevant Radio.
You're listening to Music from the Tower on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. This is Music from the Tower. And today in our tower, we have Roger Sherman, the recording man of the U.S. And he's with the Gothic label, certainly a well-known national label. But tell us how all of that came to be. There's the Loft Recordings. There's all sorts of divisions. Tell us all about them.
Well, in the early 1990s, our local classical music station, King FM in Seattle, the program director there, Peter Newman, invited me to do a radio program. They had always had some kind of organ program, and they were having a program that he knew was going to go off the air. It was a program called the Galanti Organ Hour, and it was sponsored by an electronic organ builder named Galanti in Portland. And they were paying radio stations to broadcast this, and then Galanti got bought by somebody else, bigger fish. And the writing was on the wall that this was a dollar sink that they didn't want to put more money into. So he wanted a program that was local. That was his local in orientation about organs. So he invited me to do this radio program, and we decided to call it The Organ Loft. And that was in 1993, so we've been on the air now for more than 25 years.
And how many shows?
690 unique programs.
All right, so we have 60 episodes of Music from the Tower. So I'm not intimidated or anything. That I've never ever interviewed a radio interviewer before, but it's wonderful to have you.
I think it's the second longest running radio program in Seattle.
I wish it was available for all of us, because every episode you describe just sounds amazing.
Well, it's been a lot of fun, and that sort of spawned off an interesting thread in that
little chapter.
This was the opportunity for me to build, again, a recording facility in my basement and to be able to go out. That was for the production of the radio show, because I really wanted the organ in choir music to be well represented on the radio. That is, for it to really sound good.
Not always guests. It's a lot of music with you describing the music.
It's primarily music. And like I said, the presentation, the audio presentation on the radio, the way it sounded, I wanted it to be the best sounding program on the radio station.
So, well, no doubt it is.
We started with that, and then we started making recordings of concerts to play on the radio. And then a group of people approached me, artists, and said that they would like to be producing CDs and wondered if I could do that.
I remember doing that.
And there was a whole series of both choral composers, organists, and so forth, whose work was not being represented in the national marketplace, either the commercial marketplace or the marketplace of ideas, because they were not on CDs. And the first one of these was Peter Halleck, the organist and choir master and later canon precentor of St. Mark's Cathedral, who had written a lot of choral music.
Fabulous music.
Yeah, and so that was the first disc. So
was that your very first one?
Uh-huh. Cathedral Anthems.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And from there, we launched and sallied forth, and the rest is history, as I guess they say.
And what was your brand name then?
Well, the record label became Loft Recordings.
To go with your radio show.
Yeah. And then shortly after that, we bought Gothic Records from George Dickey. And then we acquired Clarion Records. And we had a few sub-labels of our own, and pretty soon we had all these record labels, and we decided to unify them under the brand name The Gothic Catalog.
That was a very famous company all the way through.
Yeah, George did a terrific job with that.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
And also had just tons of organ recordings.
Yes, with Frederick Swan, Joan Lippincott, and recordings here and also in New York. And yeah, he did a really fantastic job,
Well, it's not easy to record the organ. It's not like it's in one place. It's all over the room.
Every recording is a different problem.
Is a different problem because there's organ in the back, organ in the front, organ in the ceiling sometimes.
Yeah.
So how do you record all those accurately? You know, and the dynamic levels are so, it's not like a flute. You know, I mean, you've got the lowest and the highest and the loudest and the softest. And
today we're very fortunate because we have high resolution digital audio that can accommodate dynamic range, which is more than you'd want to hear, you know. So we have tools now for recording things that are much better than what we had before.
Well, it's just phenomenal. And when you look at your catalog, and we'll certainly have a link to all of this on our website, it's a virtual who's who of music. Anybody that you can think of who's the best of the best is on your label.
Well, thank you. We like to associate ourselves with the best musicians, including you, of course.
Well, I wasn't setting you up for that. I was astonished when you said yes, to be honest. You know, here in L.A., you have recorded the best of our best. You've recorded All Saints Episcopal.
In Beverly Hills.
In Beverly Hills. You've recorded St. James in the City in Los Angeles.
Yes.
The two of the best choirs, not just in L.A., but on the West Coast, probably in the country.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, with some of the finest music directors there are. And now you have added to your Southern California repertoire the Christ Cathedral Gang under this Mass Marauder. So it's amazing that you, A, said yes, B, lasted for 3 days and just didn't pack up and run out screaming. But it's to hear your work, to hear us, what we're doing, and we're, of course, recording a lot of new music. So some of our pieces are grand pieces, like I Was Glad of Perry and the Matthias Let the People Praise, which got us a great big orchestra in the room. But others of our pieces are new commissions. So it took us a while to, okay, well, this is wrong. This part's not quite right. This rhythm's not accurate in all the things. This has something that's not in my score at all. So we had all of those issues, and you just were amazing to clean all that up.
You know, choral music is on fire in the United States. Right now, the number of people singing in choirs has increased dramatically over the last 5 or 10 years. And the number of pieces that are being written, new music that's being written and performed, is astounding. It's more than it is for orchestras. It's more than it is for organs. The choral music scene is just exploding. And there's so much wonderful new music. And we specialize in new recordings.
Finding that first, stuff.
Yeah, finding that stuff and finding the best stuff. So it's really wonderful to record your choir
here
and this new music. And, you know, the two choirs that you just mentioned here in Los Angeles, All Saints Beverly Hills and St. James Episcopal, both of their recordings for us have been and included new music that has really been spiritually deep and wonderful music to listen to.
Well, Jim Bradamani, who's been on this show with Tom Mueller, it's just phenomenal. I love his new recording, and I've played it over and over, and I hear them live almost every month. I drive all the way into L.A. I can't get enough of their beautiful choir, and many of their singers join us for special things like they did last night over the last few nights. It's wonderful. In any great city, you share singers. You find that pool of the best singers, the straight-tone singers, the singers that all of us choral nerds love, and then you just borrow them all over the place. If you run from All Saints to St. James, you'll see the singers running from the both places,
right,
too. It's but on Jim's album, to hear that music live and then hear it on the recording, it's almost better than live. You know, you hear things that you don't get to hear with that kind of precision and accuracy. And that's your ears, my friend, you know, pulling those things out, cleaning them all up for us.
Yeah, I'm a musician first, and so when we're ready to make a recording of something, the first thing I want to know is what is the musical effect that we're after? What is it that we are trying to form in the mind of the listener in the way that the recording sounds? And then from there, we go to microphone placement, the choice of room and things of that, then the setup of the choir and how they relate to the room and the microphones. And to produce that effect. So we don't start by saying, oh, we're going to record an organ. The microphones always go here. It depends on what music you're
recording.
Yes,
we've moved them around through the week.
Right, we certainly have.
And you've changed the sound of the room a little bit that way.
Yeah. And for Jim's recording, we were in a chapel, in a hospital chapel. And the choir.
So not recorded at St. James in the City?
No.
Okay.
This room was very special.
I hope we're not telling any tales here.
Oh, yeah.
It probably says it on the album.
You know, it had strong points and it had weak points. The weak point was that the hospital HVAC equipment was right outside the windows. So there was this noise issue, which I was able to deal with digitally. But the room itself has this wonderful ambiance, this acoustical thing going. And we put the choir in an oval for most of it and put the microphones in the middle of the oval. And that worked out very, very well. And then we moved people forward or backwards as we needed to balance the sound and so on. And we did some other things too, some other configurations. But I think we got the effect that the music really demanded. And
well,
really
and the music
it.
Was demanding. It, yeah. Very difficult. I mean, the Maganunk that's on there, oh my gosh, it takes your breath away.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think we should hear a piece. Let's hear a piece actually by Jim himself. He not only is the finest choral conductor around here, but he's also a wonderful composer, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, his just every now and then I'll see his name on the in the program because he wrote the Descant. Well, you know, it's just going to be thrilling beyond all telling.
Yeah.
And but this is a piece. It's actually the title cut of the album.
It is.
Tell
us about it. Oh, beauty. Ever ancient, ever new. This is with orchestra and choir together, and it's a setting of St. Augustine, a text, and it's just ethereal. The piece is just ethereal. The piece title is O Beauty, Ever Ancient, Ever New.
And it's a new composition by Jim Buonamici.
I don't know how to describe it without hearing it.
Well, and here it is. And we will be back with a whole lot more with our friend Roger Sherman and talk about more aspects of his career and how they all came together. But this is Jim Buonamici and St. James in the City Choir. We will be right back.
You're listening to Music from the Tower on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. This is Music from the Tower, and you've been listening to yet another piece recorded by our friend Roger Sherman, who's in the studio today. This is Not One Sparrow. Tell us about this. This is a composition of Robert Bodie.
Robert Bodie is the director of the choir, and the music was written by William Holley. Not One Sparrow is forgotten. Robert is a phenomenally talented conductor. He also writes lyrics and gets in partnership with another composer. One of my favorite, this is Choral Arts Northwest, a Seattle-based group. My favorite album of theirs is something called Life Stories. And it's a story, each piece is about love in some stage, you know, love lost, love found, and so forth and so on. And Robert wrote the lyrics to two of the pieces on the album. All of the music was written by Eric Barnum, and it is such a fantastic album.
And you recorded it?
Of course.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, I've recorded a lot of recordings with this choir. In fact, the very first recording on Loft Records, the original one, was of Peter Halleck's music, and that was Choral Arts when it was directed by Richard Sparks. So they are a fabulous, fabulous choir.
Well, we talked about how just these great choral groups all over the country, you know, are really doing phenomenal work. Certainly here in Southern California, we have the LA Master Chorale it's just amazing. And they do new works. And just last week, they did the Durfle Requiem, and they coupled it with the new work. So, you know, they're giving people chestnuts plus letting us hear new music. Yeah. Sometimes it's amazing. Sometimes it's okay, you know what I mean? That's the joy and the challenge of commissioning new things. Sometimes they're amazing, sometimes, well, they're not.
Yeah.
We also have the Pacific Chorale right here.
I've recorded them too.
Rob Eisat is, well, you probably recorded them under their previous director, right? John Alexander.
Yeah, actually, I didn't do the recording, but we produced and published discs of theirs, and they are
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, and to be just right here in Orange County, you know, we don't realize the gems we have right here, but this Choral Arts Northwest is snazzy. Wow. But you also started in another choral mecca up in Minneapolis, St. Paul. That's another place that just has one amazing choral tradition after the other. And of course, St. Olaf College is up there and all these great things. What brought you there?
Well, I was a conscientious objector. My draft number was 5.
Mine was 6.
I beat you by 1.
Yes.
I think. As my alternative service, I ended up working on the staff at McAllister College. And this is when Dale Warland was at McAllister.
Wow. Lucky you.
Yes. Lucky me. I got to sing in his choirs and also play and accompany them. And this was the first and second year of the Dale Warland Singers. And
First and second. Wow.
So the second year, they did a piece by Peter Halleck. A very difficult piece. The score was not in great shape, and I helped pull that all together. I played the piano as an accompaniment, and also for that piece, we were on the second LP that the Dale Warland Singers had done. So that experience with Dale was just life-transforming, and I'm so delighted that later on we were able to sync up and become his record label.
Ah. Well, you know, watching him make a recording in those early days had to have inspired you to. He's one of the great choral names in our country.
Oh, yeah. It's an unbelievable experience to sing with Dale.
Oh, and to hear the group.
Yeah.
And so then you moved to the Northwest. How did that happen? Did you move eventually back to the Northwest?
Well, I went to Milwaukee first as full-time director of music at St. Paul's Episcopal Church. And I taught organ and harpsichord at the Wisconsin Conservatory of Music. I did that for about 5 years and decided that I needed to have some other way to make money besides weddings and funerals.
So, is that what brought you to Microsoft?
Well, eventually, yes. I went to a trade school there, and I learned...
In Milwaukee.
And was offered a job teaching the day I graduated. So I started teaching, and...
Everybody knows brilliant minds when they see them.
Well, I loved it. I love the challenge of teaching something. And teaching something that's technical to someone who has never had that exposure is a very, very challenging thing, because we as humans don't think the way computers do. We just don't. You know, we don't care if a period is one space off. When we read something, we still know what it means. But a computer, it
throws everything
off. So, anyway, it was very challenging, and I had a great time, and then I decided that I wanted to go back to Seattle, which I did. And I got a job at Boeing Computer Services and did that for 3 years, and then decided that I really loved this new little thing called the PC. It's a small computer where you could just take it apart. Every aspect of it was accessible to you. Unlike the mainframe, where you were always being presented with some kind of environment to work in. And then I jumped off to this little company called Microsoft.
Yeah, it's just a little tiny company.
Yeah, and about 2,000 employees.
Made your way up the ranks all the way to the very first full-time director of testing. What does that mean?
Well, at that time, we had as many testers as there were developers. So the idea was that the testing aspect was a technical field, and in order to get all the programs and particularly Windows to work on a wide variety of hardware configurations, this really required a great deal of testing. So, I don't know, I became the first director of testing, and
you had a whole team under you that was also...
Well, it was a different kind of position. It was one in which I would convene the test managers of the company and interact with them, or have them interact with each other to transfer best practices. And I also drove tools development and things like that. That was during the time of Windows 95 and Office 95. It was a great job. And then I also went out and evangelized Microsoft's quality and testing environments in the technical fields and conventions and things like that.
Were you also making music at the same time?
Yeah.
This doesn't sound like a job that somebody who graduated from the Oberlin School of Music would jump into. It just shows that you really did have those two mindsets going all at the same time.
Well, I did have a computer science minor at Oberlin also.
Okay.
I didn't have a major then, but they did have a minor, and that served me very well in that environment. I did a lot of different things at Microsoft. I also... did research on radio and the internet for MSN and other things. They're all technical things, but it was a wonderful time. Many smart people, so much fun to work with, so many smart, motivated
minds.
Folks.
Yeah, it really is. It's fascinating, isn't it? And that was what brought you to the apex of the recording world for all of us.
The radio show started while I was still at Microsoft.
Okay. So there was still a little musical spark. Did you have a church job all that time as well?
I was associate organist at St. Mark's Cathedral.
Wow.
So I was still
of course
playing.
You wanted to play the flint drop.
Yeah, so I was very active as a musician as well as being at Microsoft. Some other things I did there that people might recognize, I was on the team that produced the first version of Microsoft Publisher, the first version of Windows Works, if you remember the Works products. I also worked on the Mac Works product. I did the first game product Microsoft ever did. It was called the Windows Entertainment Pack. And we also did accounting projects. I was on Microsoft Money. I also helped, was manager of a group that worked on a product that was for small business accounting.
That's unbelievable. I've never had any guest anywhere, anytime, say all these things.
Yeah.
You know, they're all just music nerds. I can barely play the organ, leave alone do any of that stuff. But, you know, it's amazing that that was a whole part of your life.
Yeah. And technology is really interesting, but music is so much more interesting.
Yes. And the combination of that, you know, being able to take your musical gifts and be able to share your manipulation talents in making these gorgeous recordings for all sorts. Who are some of the other people that you've recorded over the years?
Well, in the choral realm, of course, we mentioned Dale Warland. There's also Vocal Essence in Minneapolis with Philip Brunel And a
couple, he's a great name in choral music, isn't he? When you think of the great things he's done for choral music, editing editions, but, you know, having huge worldwide symposiums come to the U.S. I mean, he was responsible for so much in the choral world.
Yeah. And, of course, he did some CDs with Garrison Keillor, and those are always fun.
Fun things.
Dale Edelman has also been with us for a long time. He used to be at All Saints Beverly Hills. He's now at St. Philip's Cathedral, Episcopal Cathedral in Atlanta,
right.
Which is, by congregation, the largest Episcopal parish in the country. He is doing wonderful, wonderful work there. We've done a couple of CDs with him. Yeah. I have to mention also J. Riley Lewis, who is no longer with us. He was director of the Cathedral Choral Society at the Washington National Cathedral. That was their large choir. And he also was director of the Washington Bach Consort. Which was an early music group.
But I always heard they were amazing.
They're very, very good. And he was a good friend of mine, and I miss him dearly, but he did a lot of wonderful things. We also have recordings of the Washington National Cathedral Choir itself.
Who was your favorite director of that group? Richard Dirksen?
this is a long...
Paul Calloway?
We don't go quite that far back.
Okay.
Mike McCarthy is
third
director,
now,
and he is fantastic as well.
Fabulous work. And Ben Straley was just on the show a few weeks ago, you know, who was their organist for the last several years, and just fabulous work going on there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mike is a great choral technician.
I have to also say there's some more Seattle choirs. The Tudor Choir with Lauren Pontaine was one of our very first choirs to record. He also does a lot of innovative work, a lot of new compositions in Seattle. We've recorded and published the music of Alice Parker and her.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She's also a good friend. There's a couple in Georgia, Deanna Joseph and her husband, Dan Barra. And I recorded Dan Barra when he was at East Carolina University in Greenville, North Carolina. He moved to Georgia so that he could get married to this wonderful woman. And they just had a baby last year. Deanna is at Georgia State University in Atlanta, and Dan is at the University of Georgia in Athens. So their house is halfway between the two. They are both young, extraordinary choral conductors. And next week, I'm going over there
You're
to record them.
Next,
yeah,
right.
That I just think they're fantastic, and they've been a great privilege.
Well, we'll be looking for those recordings to come out, the new ones. Well, let's hear a bit more music. Before we talk about new projects on the horizon, there was one. But this one is Sure on His Shining Night.
Well, you shouldn't come to this part of the country without talking about Morten Lordsen, who is such a great composer. I think he writes the most beautiful music in the choral world today.
Our church choirs know a few pieces.
Yeah.
You know, we know Onata Lux, we know Magnum Mysterium.
Yeah.
But we don't have the breadth as church musicians of all those. That's all we know. And we say, well, they sound the same. But there's a lot of Lordsen that does not sound the same, right?
Right. And he is a beautiful pianist as well. We've just done a recording of his music, or a recording of Pacific Northwest composers. Now, you think... Wait a minute.
He
lives down here.
He belongs to us.
Yeah. But the fact is that he also has a home in the San Juan Islands, northwest of Seattle, which is also where I live.
Your neighboring islands?
He lives on a neighboring island. And he actually, I think, does most of his composing up there. But we just recently did a recording with the Portland Repertory Singers.
Mm.
And this is a choir of about 120 people that sing so well in tune that you swear that it's a smaller group
until the
dynamic range opens up and you hear what they're really, really capable of.
And this is he actually playing the piano as well.
Yes, he's playing the piano on this recording. The Oregon Repertory Singers is directed by Ethan Sperry, and the title of the CD is called Shadows on the Stars.
Wow.
Which is an excerpt from one of the texts from Morten's pieces. And the whole album is works of Northwest composers, and it's really, really spectacular. But what's wonderful about Morten's pieces is that he's actually playing the piano himself.
That's very cool.
And he has such a lyrical way. He can bend the phrase in such a wonderful way that it just draws you right in.
Well, and here it is. And we'll be back with a lot more. And so please stay tuned.
You're listening to Music from the Tower on Relevant Radio.
And we are back. This is Roger Sherman in our tower today. And we could do about 10 shows with you, Roger. You're amazing. We could do a whole show on your Microsoft career. We could do a whole show about your radio program. And we could do a whole show on your recording career and your musician, the aspects of that part of your life. What on earth is going on here? You are in so many things, but music is still somehow at the top of that, yes?
Music is the reason. And we sometimes don't understand, I think, in our culture, how important it is. Music is part of our culture. Culture, the function of culture, is to make the next generation more intelligent than the current one. Culture is what we pass down after we die. And we all die. So the focus on what we pass on is the true focus of our humanity. And music is one of those things. And when music, its effect on the brain and how it works to create intelligence and flexibility has just now been being discovered.
In study after study.
Yes. And it's particularly in the last 10 years. People have the tools now to see what's going on in the brain during music, musical experiences, both as a player or as a listener. And, you know, it used to be that, well, music's a right brain activity, but they've discovered that it lights up everything.
Yes.
And that if you take a look at it from an external standpoint and you see how people, children, let's say, who sing in choirs in high school or junior high school, whatever.
Are you listening, Southern California?
Those kids are doing better at academics. They're more socialized and they have better educational outcomes than those who are not in the music programs. And it's a connection to the brain facility, which is not very obvious to a lot of people. It's go to school to get a job, right?
Yes.
But if you want the flexibility of many different jobs and your ability to do them better, something like music is a better...
That's what leads.
Yeah.
So. I mean, I see that having done children's choirs now for 46 years as a pro, as a professional, it's amazing to see the children that come your way. Now, you observed our kiddie choir last night.
Yeah, wonderful.
And they're just amazing children.
Yeah.
You know, some are in the school for the arts. Some just came to us, never sang a note in their life, but came to summer camp for their mom needed somebody to babysit them for a week, and then were hooked.
Yeah.
You know, somebody like our own David Ball, who came, sang with us in the choir, and the next thing you know, we hooked him on the organ. And the next thing you know, he's off to Juilliard. You know,
right.
I mean,
right.
These kids who come to me, who have come through my years, that people that I've touched, great musicians in our country, like a Rob Layman, or, you know, a Zach Hemingway, or a David Ball, or all of them have come along and been touched by music, and that spark is in them.
Yeah.
But they're super intelligent in so many other fields, in so many other ways.
Yeah. Well, think about this. Think about a Bach organ concert, for example. For a short period of time, the organist and the audience think Bach's thoughts in real time. That is, in their brains, they are thinking the way Bach thought. They are elevated in their intelligence to that level for that short period of time. That's what music is. It recreates the experience, the mental experience of a prior generation. And that's why it's important to learn Shakespeare, Bach, great choral music, because in the repeated experience of inhabiting the brains of and the mindsets and of the greatest minds that have ever lived in our race, this is what culture is for. This is what it does. And that's why it's important beyond just the experience of hearing it.
And the experience of hearing it is what you provide to us so beautifully through your recordings. And live performance is something we talk about here on the show all the time. Every show ends with that plea to go out and hear great music and live performance. Fill those concert halls. Fill those parishes that are doing great things, the All Saints, the St. James, hopefully someday the Christ Cathedrals.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's beyond that, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's that touching, that spark of the divine sometimes in something that's really beyond our understanding. When I'm sitting there listening to some great artist play Bach, I don't think, oh, now I'm in Bach's mind. might sound, but somehow it happens. Somehow there
right.
you are.
There are, of course, good performances and bad performances.
Well, yes,
but,
of course.
You know, if you've been to a baseball game, you know what it's like when the pitcher pitches the ball and then your guy at the plate swings the bat and hits. What happens? Everybody in the audience jumps to their feet because the batter didn't just hit the ball. They did. And music is a vicarious experience. And at its highest level, performance level, the listener feels like they are playing. They surrender their sense of time, tempo, pulse to the music. To the music leads them, and that they, in their minds, are playing the piece. And that when you get 1,000 people, say, singing together a great hymn, their minds are all in the same direction. They're all aligned. That is a unique human experience. No other creature on the earth does that.
And the breathing together, if you're all singing together, all of those things, just that coming together. One of the great champions of organ music, and I think one of the great artists of our time, is Paul Jacobs. Mm-hmm. And he's constantly preaching, in a sense, to put your phones away, to, you know, stop being distracted and just take this half hour or 45 minutes or hour and a half or whatever it is to enter deeply into this performance. And he always gives people things to listen for, and you know, he guides you through the piece, and then he sits down and always by heart, always miraculously, always through every color the organ possesses, takes us into that world, you know. And when you have an artist at that level, being able to do that to people and to just encourage them to be one with the performance, really be present to the performance. Because you see that all the time sitting in the audience. Oh, they're checking their phones and they're reading the program and they're all over the place. And you're thinking, hello, catch this. It's so cool.
Yeah.
It's so wonderful.
I think of Horowitz. I think that the incredible performances that he gave just grabbed people and took them out of where they were, wherever that was, and brought them into the role of making the music that he was playing on the piano. That they had mentally shifted to that role. You can hear the way the audience responds. I don't know. Do you have the recording of the return to Carnegie Hall?
I do.
The Chopin Ballade in G minor, where people are screaming just before the last note because they're gonna. You know, he's playing it.
They can't wait.
They can't wait. But they're also playing that note. You know, and their mind. That note is something that they are doing in the same way that I talked about the baseball thing. And Horowitz, for me, is he's just the master of that, of being able to capture the minds of the listeners and to bring them into playing the piece with him as he's performing. That
well,
is
Virgil
the highest
Fox
level.
Was another one in the organ world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can remember being at Fillmore West with Virgil playing.
Oh, you've dated yourself now.
Yes, I really have. But everyone in that room was playing the jig fugue.
Every single
person. You didn't have to know a thing about music to be drawn into that piece. Well, my friend, I just can't thank you enough for being with us here in the Tower.
Oh, my pleasure.
I cannot thank you enough for being the person who has recorded our Christ Cathedral choirs in their infancy for the very first time. And I hope it's the first of many, many wonderful recordings here at Christ Cathedral campus. Well, thank you again for being with us. Roger, this has been amazing. I love our time together. We need to do about 10 more shows to get it all in.
All right.
But we're going to end with you playing a piece on the St. Mark's organ. Tell us about it.
Oh, it's a piece. It's a piece for Spanish trumpets, you know, horizontal trumpets. And the concert that it was played in was the 20th year concert remembrance of Ipar Biggs' inaugural concert. So this happened exactly 20 years after Biggs had inaugurated the Flintrop organ.
And did he play this piece?
And he played this piece, yes.
And you played it at the 20th anniversary?
Yes, Carol Terry, who's at the University of Washington, and I played his entire concert together.
Wow.
Recreating
That's fabulous.
It's something
she's coming down to be with us at our AGO convention this summer.
Yeah, she's a very good organist.
Fabulous, yes, and so are you. And so this is La Romanesca. Yes. By Valente. And this is our guest, Roger Sherman, performing. Thank you for being with us again, Roger. It's great to have you.
My pleasure.